Welcome to this special episode of Breakfast Conversation. This week we are on tour, and we are, that's Adam Anders Hansen, my co-host and first son. Adam is also the one who has made the introductions for the previous episodes. And we are on tour together for 1 week. And today we are at Whiteley Bay outside Newcastle and directly at the sea. It's a beautiful place, and we flew into London late, late yesterday evening and drove the 500 kilometers up to this beautiful place in the night. And this journey gave me a bit of a cold, so my voice is not the best one for podcasting today. But luckily, I have my co-host with me, who has already also prepared some questions for our guest today. But what makes this episode really special is that we are sitting together with our guest today, and it's Ben.
Yep.
Ben Hayden.
Ben Hayden, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And Ben, we are very excited to have had a small tour here at your school. But would you please tell a bit about yourself and then about the school where we are today?
Of course, yeah. So, I'm Ben Hayden. I work at a school called Monkhouse Primary School, North Shields, which is right by Whiteley Bay. I've been here for about just over a year and a half. So a lot of my time that's been spent here has been a lot about finding my feet and finding my way. And I guess, which you can come on to later, that the change of why has taken place as well at this place. We are a fairly small school. We've got about 250, 260 pupils on roll. There's one form entry. And currently I am year six teacher. So big year, but back in again. And yeah, we've got fantastic use of support from all staff. The kids are friendly, they're lovely. And you know, as you say, the area is just, it's just so far from where I'm used to, because I'm not actually from here. I'm I'm not really immigrated, but I came here about 3 years ago. So before, I used to live just north of London, about 25 to 30 miles north of London, Hertfordshire. And whilst I was there, I met my now wife. And at the time, she was studying for a PGC as well. We got together, and then we ended up having a little boy called Thomas. And then it's from that point that we had to kind of reestablish where we were going to base ourselves. Victoria's, she was in her first year of teaching. I had then just started my PGCE, and I only had 2 days of paternity leave based upon when Thomas was born to when I started my course. And I kind of got told, you know, like, the course was important. You could defer or you could take the 2 days and come straight in. So there's a lot of discussions about what was the right thing to do. And we decided to actually just throw ourselves in and we'll just plough and we'll cope. So we got on with it. I studied in London at Institute of Education for a year, very tough year. And then from the point that I then graduated, we then made the decision to move up north. So my wife's originally from this way, but south of the river in South Shields. And we're very, very fortunate because her dad had taken early retirement and had offered to hugely support us, which we're eternally grateful for, and provide the childcare, which was going to save us so much money. Because had we taken the childcare down south, because both of my parents worked full time, they couldn't take that time off to support us. It was going to leave us with, like, for one of our wages, about 30 quid profit in the pocket after childcare. And that's the point where we kind of started reflecting. You know, you understand why so many people don't then go back to work, because it just, the childcare cost just doesn't make sense. So we took the long journey up here. And ever since I've been here, I've just always, every day felt like I'm on holiday. As Jacob said earlier, we're right by the sea. It's beautiful, crisp, golden sands. Not what you expect from North East. I think from an outside perspective, I think I'd always envisioned up north being greyer than the south, but in actual fact it's so far from, so much untouched land in Northumbria, loads of coastal walks, loads of mountainous walks, the Pennines. It's just so much around here, and it's just absolutely beautiful, and I don't think I'll ever turn back down.
Yeah, and it's also interesting for us when we came here to the beach today and saw the beach, how familiar it looks. So the Danish west coast has also those long, white beaches and looks a bit similar. just yeah. that they are for us the west coast and here
whichever side of the, yeah. the north
and it's on the same height, so if we could it would be the direct
just wave from shore to shore.
Yeah. And I think a bit more than 1,000 years ago it was the Vikings visiting the area.
Yeah. And, came over.
Yeah. And we met this summer in Amsterdam.
Yeah, we did.
So, yeah. And you became ADE this summer.
I did, yeah. Became ADE this year. The experience is just incredible. It will be an unforgettable moment as well. The amount that's packed into those days that you spend at Institute and the amount of connections you make and the formal and the informal conversations you have, all of them are incredibly meaningful. And sometimes even the more informal conversations, the ones which build the bridges and make them stronger, it's nice to go in and kind of use it as a base. I found it was really nice to go in and use it as a base to kind of just get to know people and just really kind of tie those bridges and make those connections with those people there and then. And then thereon after, you can then look at, oh, this is what this person's doing, this is what that person's doing, that fits in what I want to do, or I've got great ideas for that person. You can then build those more professional links for me after the Institute. Yeah. I mean, you kind of really kind of find out what it is that you're taking from this and then what you can also give.
Yeah, and I recognize that from thinking back to my first in the Institute, and I think the Institute experiences have been so different from time to time. They have this different role, and but every time I highlight. I would like to switch over to my co-host, who have prepared some questions for
you. Of course, yeah.
So, just a second.
So, Ben, I have a few questions for you.
Fire away. I see
how well I did you and my dad meet?
We met formally at Institute, but before that we had met via the power of Twitter and social media. I signed up for Twitter and I looked at my profile in 2011 and I only started using it at the start of this year. I think my page had been there very just dormant, just doing nothing for ages. And then when I found out about all the ADE programs and the way in which Twitter could be used as a professional platform, that's when that medium had a lot of purpose for me. And I was just, there's other ADs in the area, and friends or colleagues and so forth. So I found them on Twitter, and then I found Jacob, or your dad, through them as well. And as soon as I clocked on to who he was and stuff it was doing, I followed him quite a lot.
Yeah. Ben, I have been on 3 cafes today. I see white bread everywhere. Why do people eat so much white bread?
I don't know. I think it's just the bread of the people. But up here, if you get the chance to, white bread's not normally the bread of the north, from what I've found anyway. It seems to be something called stotty bread, which come in kind of large, kind of roll, like bun-type looking things. But you have to try one of those. Other breads are available. Brown bread does exist, seeded bread does exist. But I know that my son is just, he'll only at the minute touch white bread.
Okay. What's your favourite breakfast?
My favourite breakfast? I think being British has got to be fried, isn't it? With eggs got to be scrambled. I'll only eat eggs scrambled or if they're in a cake, in the cake mixture. But funny enough, even though this is breakfast conversations, I don't really often eat breakfast. I find myself not enough time in the morning from the time that I decide to then get to get up to then having to be out the house. So it's normally for me in the morning is I'm up, I'm showered and changed, sort out my little boy and make his lunch and then I'm off. So my breakfast normally consists of a cup of tea or whatever biscuits lying around the staff room when I get into school. If I had a breakfast choice, it would be a fry up without a doubt with pepper on the top and lots of ketchup.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Why did you become a teacher?
Why did I become a teacher? Really good question. At the time that I became a teacher, I was very much also in a bit of a rut, a bit like Jacob Wilcox mentioned in one of your previous podcasts, that he was kind of in a bit of a rut as well. And before I started teaching, I left university with a degree in music production. And I then went into a line which had nothing to do with music production whatsoever, and started working in sort of restaurants and bars, waiting and doing bar service. And I stuck at that for about 6 years and started being assistant manager and being a general manager of a small kind of gastro pub out in the countryside down south where I lived. And whilst I was working there, that's when I met my now wife, who was studying for PGC at the time. Although I think my parents had said before, you know, we really see you as a teacher, like, should we say, consider, always used to put it behind me, never really considered it, because I was enjoying what I was doing up until they found the point that circumstances then changed after I met Victoria and things like that. So when she was in her PGC, she was in her placements, and she would often come back and have all these wonderful stories, stories you'd never ever hear, or scenarios you'd never ever hear about unless you worked in a school, things the children came out with, things the children did. And for her and for me, even me just listening to it brought a lot of warmth and a lot of like admiration for the work which actually goes on in schools. And then I decided, you know what? I've been told like it might be a good opportunity for me to take on, and people could see me doing it. So I thought, you know what, I'll go for it. I then took on my PGC based on the fact that I enjoyed the stories which were coming home from my wife when she was a teacher. So
she was an important inspiration for you.
Absolutely, yeah. And my uncle was a teacher as well, and my auntie has been a teacher, had a good relationship with teachers at school, but it wasn't until the point in which Victoria's bringing back all these stories that I actually thought, actually, this could be a career path for me. And it's one I jumped onto, and I'm thankful I did. I wouldn't be here today.
And I think we are as well. It has been really inspiring. We have shared so many good stories already. What is your next question, Adam?
I think this school looks fun. I like that there's so much fun to have here. What is the best thing you like about the school?
The best thing I like about the school? Well, first of all, thanks very much. I'll pass the feedback on to her teacher. She'll be very happy as well. You can come back again, she'll say. It is a very fun school. It's a very colourful school as well. I love the fact that we take the prior learning, the prior work of terms that have just passed, and it's then displayed throughout the corridors. We try to our best make our classrooms immersive based upon the projects or the topics in which we're studying, and then those immersions then come into the corridors. So the immersion runs throughout. So I think that's great. And the school has recently kind of taken on outdoor play and learning approaches as well. So there's a lot of outdoor equipment to play with. They've built structures for the kids to play with, for role play, outdoor stages. I mean, we've even got suitcases that kids ride in suitcases. They just get open the suitcase up and they get pulled along outside. It's just all about imaginative play, especially when play is concerned. So that's probably one of the most fun elements, I think, that I get to see on a daily basis.
I think also that was one of the things that you mentioned, Adam, before, that you really like there's so much stuff to play with and to build with, both outside and inside in the school. Isn't it right?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's important, especially if you've had time in the classroom and they've been working really hard. It's just nice to go out and not have to play in a sterile environment. It's nice to go out and have the opportunity to just create in play as well as in class, and it does break that up a bit.
I think that was the playfulness that you saw everywhere that you really liked. That you, wasn't it, Adam?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you could build your dream school, what would it look like, Ben?
It's really funny because I've been talking about this with a colleague of mine before, and it's actually based upon the school in which your dad showed me that he helped design, create, and then work in. What was the name of the school again, Jacob?
Flow Factory.
That's the one, yeah. Out in Denmark, the one on the river.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when we was at Institute, I took the time to talk to Jacob because someone had told me, you know, make sure you speak to Jacob and ask him about learning environments because he's got a great story and fantastic pictures to show. And the school in which your dad had helped design is the school that I would like to design if I was to build one. The learning environments, the space, the broken down of barriers and walls and stuff, it's all kind of free-flowing. And even to the point there's the auditorium outside with the however big foot screen that comes down along the river. And actually, in line with the project we're doing now, we've been looking at a lot of the local industry with Year 6, and we're starting to think about what is the future of our area. And despite a lot of the industry turning to sort of helping with renewable energy sources, we're actually going to take our kids down to the riverside at some point to look at a space which is unused on the river and think about, from their learning and everything else, what they could build there. And in my mind, it's that school in which it's in Denmark, but here. So that's the kind of school that would be. I know it doesn't. It's hard to kind of say because listeners will be blind to what it is that I've seen. But if you looked for, is it what was it called again? Sorry,
Flow Factory.
The Flow Factory school in Denmark. You'll know what I mean. It's the young learners work in kind of booths almost as well, and each booth has got Apple TV and a screen, so teaching can take part from anywhere around. You had like the bubble kind of, was it like a bubble where you taught centrally in the middle of all the
we had this fire camp inspired donuts
that's the one I remember. It being kind of like low lit blue and purple kind of lighting. Nice and calm. And but I think somewhere where learning environments are really taken in consideration, really just to kind of know that learning is not constrained by boundaries and walls, and that our learning can take place wherever, to whatever lengths, based upon how it's delivered and how we as teachers can provide that learning.
Yeah.
Okay, that was all the questions.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Adam. High five. I'll give a high five as well.
And then I will take over again. Thank you to Adam. And Ben, thank you for the nice words about Flow Factory.
That's all right. I'm not trying to, I haven't been paid. I'm not been paid by Jacob to plug that. But it was, it's one which I kind of thought, if I had the money and I had a team or the expertise or the knowledge of how to do something like that, then that's where I'd look.
Yeah, but I find it also super inspiring to come here and see some schools. And also, I have mainly worked with schools or school designs for high school students.
Uh-huh.
And seeing this playful approach all over here. And as you say, very, very simple materials on the playground where they can build their own things to really use their imagination.
Sometimes it feels like we're the front of a charity shop where people come and donate constantly things by the door, and we take them in, but the children love them. And it could be anything from a pillow off a sofa to, a broken suitcase. We've got anything. We'll take it to school to take anything to enhance the play opportunities.
Yeah. And I think especially this free play where they can construct things and use their own imagination. And when not, things are made out of plastic and it looks like a plane, and then it can only be a plane, exactly. But if it's pallets
we've even got
PVC pipes and so on, they can construct everything.
Yeah, we've even got Year 6 children who will wrap a country's flag around them, pretend it's a cape.
Ah, okay.
And stick cool. on whatever hat they can find. And as I say, like even the Afghanistan 2 children thrive on it. They're really on board. And it's really nice to see that it's not just limited to the younger children, and that the older children, they are, although they're upper key stage 2 and they're going off to high schools and stuff next year, they are still children, and it's nice to still see that they can be.
It reminds me about a movement we had in Denmark in the 60s and 70s where we had a lot of those free play, construction-based playgrounds where kids also could hurt themselves maybe a bit, and now everything has got so safe. And it's so nice to see something that
there's it is, isn't it? The curse of the health and safety, although it's there to protect us, it does limit.
Yeah.
But it's nice to kind of, you know, got the right protocols in place, you can still have fun and you can still do things.
And what would you like to tell us a bit about your work here with digital literacy and the iPads?
Yeah, of course. So, yeah. Actually, when I came here about a year and a half, it was January 2018. I had never ever used an iPad in a classroom. I came into the school and was covering a paternity leave at the time. I'm still here, and every child had an iPad. Or an equivalent technological device as a tablet. And I was so wide-eyed, I didn't know where to start, what to begin with, how they could be used. Because I don't ever use an iPad before, just to use it as a bigger phone, listen to music, take it around and play games on it and things like that, using it as a bigger screen to the phone. But then to recognise its use in education was just mind-blowing, the way that you could reconstruct learning and improve positive outcomes in work was just great. So I originally came to when I came to school, I wasn't a computer lead. I became a computer lead in September of last year, and it was once I then had the computer lead responsibilities that obviously you have to lead by example. So yeah. I really started exploring the different ways in which you could use it. And even from the simplest things of just through geography, using Google Expeditions, for me as well as for the children, was just incredible. A lot of children don't often have the opportunities to go to places outside of their own home environments, and it allowed them to become immersed and almost walk around the virtual reality tours, listen to the narrations, and really get a great more feel and understanding of what else there is and you know, what things look like and how they can compare that to the local area, and really just enhance their learning.
And it was interesting to see one of your colleagues gave us this tour when we came, Adam and I, a couple of hours ago. And I think it was...
We've just dropped the bombshell there with the fact that although it's breakfast conversations, it's not breakfast. It's actually 25 in the afternoon. But we said earlier on that it's always breakfast somewhere.
Yeah. So right now it must be breakfast somewhere at the East Coast in the USA or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think it was really interesting to see. I've been at a lot of iPad schools around the world, and especially also in Denmark, of course. But where we have put out a lot of iPads in schools in Denmark, I think what is impressive here has been how articulated the kids were about the value they or how they use it and for what purposes, and also telling Adam that they are playing Roblox and Minecraft and all the games that he likes, but they were quite reflective about when it was play and when it was for learning.
Exactly.
And
yeah, exactly.
It was quite impressive that they are very, very good at reflecting on their own use of the iPad.
That's right. And it's really important to work with the device you've got rather than say, no, you can't do that, and put boundaries on things. You know, it's important to allow the children to explore how these devices could be used in leisurely, safely, and also how they could be used effectively for their own learning as well. You know, if they're lucky on a Friday, they might get like 5 minutes of free time, and things like that. But there's so many programs out there that do wonders for education. That it's nice that we invest time and sometimes we will invest a bit of money into buying particular apps and platforms and things to help children develop fundamental basic skills to enhance their own learning on a device that children are naturally engaged with anyway, because it's just the age we're in the technology age. It's already taken over, and it's good to use it for its full purpose, I guess, in education.
Yeah, definitely. And now you're saying, touching on the future, I'm myself super interested in those future scenarios. What can we expect, both for the kids that are going to school now? What kind of technologies do they have to master when they become adults and are in their work in the workforce, and I want to create a good life, but also just for education the next 10, 20 years and so on. So I know it's a hard question, but what would be your hopes for the future of education?
I would hope that the teacher is not replaced, and I don't think it ever would be, because you need to have that connection socially and building relationships with peers and with respected adults, and you have that mutual respect. Whereas I think if you just didn't have the teacher, that would be lost, and it'd be an absolute shame. So I think there would still be members of staff in schools. I think technology will be continued to grow. We don't know what the future will look like, and a lot of schools would often say we don't know what the future will look like, so we'll just stick to what we know. And they don't often then take that leap of faith or do the active research into looking at the benefits of using iPads in schools. I think probably less so now, because you're seeing it more used more in effective ways. But I think people would often sort of see iPads as being detrimental to learning as opposed to positive. Mm. And I think that barrier is being broken down, and it's been recognised that actually these are fundamental.
Yeah.
So many more things you can do now than you couldn't do before.
Yeah.
And it doesn't just enhance learning, it transforms it. And I think that's the important part, getting the transformation of learning through the technology devices that really makes the purpose true and makes the purpose relevant.
But I think also, as you say, it both transforms it, but I think also some critics, they maybe think that it's a question about digital versus the analog or the way we used to do things.
Yeah.
And I think
sticking
it was
to traditions.
And I think it was so nice here to see that it's this free flowing, using the iPad, but also small paper sized whiteboards and a lot of creative other materials that they could work with, and tables with sand on it and so on. So I think here it was really at your school here, there's a good example that it's not a question about going full digital and not using all the qualities of the analog world. It's just using it together as both tools for what.
Yeah, and it is, you know, it's important to develop those fine motor skills with handwriting things. And I know there's certain platforms that now that do allow things like that to happen on devices. But I think having it as using the analog, using the pens and things is still just important, and it's important to keep this skill. So hand in hand, that is kind of where we are in terms of using it.
And I thought also you said earlier that you hope that the teacher will not be replaced, and I think especially it would be so interesting to see what teachers can do together with the artificial intelligence and so on. But learning is a social activity, and that happens between students, and
some kind of teacher
or guide is necessary.
Absolutely.
Ben, I also know you do a lot of work with project-based learning.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
Yeah. Please tell us a bit about your work regarding project-based learning.
Yeah, so the school adopts a learning approach called project-based learning, and the thinking behind it and what the reason why we sort of developed and started using it is because where project, or we don't really use the word topic anymore, we use a project, but beforehand it was sort of topic sessions, they're very limited to time outside of all the other curricular subjects that you had to fit in. And it became a massive shame. So we looked into project-based learning. And the idea behind it is that it allows children to spend a lot of time developing their thinking around sort of global issues and a project or topic of interest. And as a result, we are able to feed in the projects that we undergo termly, it changes each term, into all subjects. So all the subjects, they got just basically every single session, it was almost like a cross-curricular link.
That's good. So it's cross-curricular projects. So,
even if you're looking at local areas, you might look at how plants might grow in this area compared to plants grow in another area. If you're making links to Mesopotamia and the Sumerians and things like that, and environments, even into maths in terms of context or problems and stuff that come through from maths problems, and it just really ties everything together really nicely, and every single subject therefore has meaning, has purpose, and it's fit for use, and because of the time that's invested in it, the children gain a lot more knowledge as well. Yeah. So we have all this sort of knowledge enhanced. We have a lot of the knowledge sessions and skills obviously then help with that. And then I guess kind of to complement that as well, we use solo taxonomy as well as a means for assessment to develop and improve high level thinking in our children as well. So you spend a lot of time at being able to identify something and being able to identify a few things and then making relational links and then really sort of hitting that sort of greater depth and that deepening of understandings through being able to hypothesize. So they now have a bank of knowledge to be able to make predictions based upon the prior learning and really can justify and analyze. And that's kind of the approach it's taken. It's great because the children become a lot more mature through that. They become a lot more independent and engaged. And a lot of those sessions, well, when we come to those sort of endpoints, we'll make like vlogs, put things together on Book Creator, really use that use of transformation of our learning by bringing the green screen down. We've got a roller above the window. So it's normally used as a read-write ink area, but while the roller blind down, the window's out. So it
multifunctional.
But multifunctional room, yeah. And I guess when you're limited on space, it's quite important to be able to find those opportunities where you can utilize rooms for more than one purpose. So they have the opportunity through that as well to really bring that digital literacy through the creativity, through green screen and animations and...
But I think also it's highly interesting that you say that you are working with solo taxonomy. I think for a lot of schools, they are struggling with project-based learning or challenge-based learning and implementing those kind of approaches. But all of, if they are coming from a tradition with a Bloom taxonomy, it can be quite hard to do projects. And I think that's really interesting that you are working with solo taxonomy.
We've decided to find the way, And we've been kind of redesigning the curriculum across all subjects, and to the point that we are now for foundation subjects, we are assessing via solo to try and really allow children to take the time and develop the skills for higher order thinking, especially where that sort of extended abstract element comes through.
Yeah.
But it is really nice. It's good to see it's coming through and it's starting to piece together. I'm not taking credit for it because I didn't put it together at the school, but I'll talk about
I'm doing your part.
Good, thank you.
And I see also this awareness of the skills you want to develop. Now we are sitting in the, can't remember what it's called in English, but the room where teachers gather and drink coffee or tea.
Yeah, well, this is we call this the community room.
The community
I think
room.
It might have used to have been the staff room, but okay. It's now a community room. So
community room.
Extra bit of space that we can use for things like this, like podcast recordings.
And you have this beautiful visualization on the wall with the light house. And the taxonomy on there and all the ships that are the skills that you want to develop at
exactly,
the kids.
Yeah, and all of that's all based upon that adventurous play. So they're all, your verbs we relate to that. And the school's very good at promoting that kind of positivity in those reflections and stuff throughout and reminding like why we do this. We do this because we want to be reflective, we want to follow in good leadership and things. So it's
they just sort of found it a beautiful, interesting way to visualize it, but also visualize it in a place where the teachers see it every day and get reminded about mission.
Down one corridor is a Chinese dragon that's been created out of boxes and tissue paper.
And underneath we have all the photos from actual situations on the playground, and so that's fantastic. Lastly, I would love to hear a bit more about. I know it's a very active ADE community up here.
It is, yeah. It's five of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
please tell a bit more about
it. It's like the snowball effect, isn't it? But as I said before, I had no idea how to use iPads in the classroom a year and a half ago. It wasn't until last December that I even knew what an ADE was. So it's been a very kind of, for me, it's felt like a really quick turnaround,
yeah.
But one that's kind of rooted in intention and the best possible outlook. It's what I wanted to do, really wanted to strive for.
And that there already were some active ADEs so here that could...
There's already a couple here before us. Yeah. So there was Paul Tullock, who's around the corner, who's doing great things, and he's got his APLS now, as well as Laura Dickinson, who looks after the North Tyneside Learning Trust, and she keeps all of us ICT leads in check. Great at sort of putting on the events and organising training, and we have the annual garage band performance as well, which we do at the Whitley Bay Playhouse. And we've also got, so new this year, apart from myself, there's Dawn Guy at Denby, and there's Lindsay Carr as well, Stevenson Memorial, who manages the RTC in the area as well. So all very much active in our roles. And we're thinking of doing our own sort of mini institute every half term, like a meet-up, because it's nice to kind of take that time to meet, to share, to be informal and informal at the same time, because life's so busy.
Yeah,
and as being a full-time teacher as well, it's really hard to often find that time to sit and reflect on how we can then engage with our ADEs and make things on a wider scale. So that's going to allow that time, the thinking time, and that those thoughts for collaboration and then coming together to look at projects and next steps.
And I think it's very valuable that you have this combination of a quite good ADE community of five ADEs living close together.
Yeah.
But still working with different schools or not different schools.
5 miles, 5, 10 miles max.
So you have that, you can inspire each other because you are working on different schools and doing things differently, but still you can easily meet.
Definitely.
It must be perfect.
Yeah, and we're all North Tyneside as well, so all this side of the river.
I often have to drive hours before I can.
You find another one.
I think, meet fellow ADEs.
I think it's been. I think we've been really, really lucky because this year, if you think there's like 30 odd taken from for institute becoming part of the ADE program, 30 odd from the UK alone, and I guess three of us came from North Tyneside.
Yeah.
So I think it's nice to have almost we're kind of like localized in that sense that we can fall in that support face to face quite often if needed.
Yeah.
As well as also branching out.
Yeah, and I think maybe I'll go to and speak with a couple of the other ADEs over the next days.
Find them on Twitter and see what they're doing.
Yeah, we will include them in the show notes.
Yeah.
And I think I'll speak with Paul in an hour or so.
I know, you're staying with him, yeah. After a long journey, you've not slept since yesterday, apart from the hour.
So, but thank you very much, Ben, for showing us around. Opening the door to your school.
Yeah,
and
been here twice today now.
Yeah.
Things number three, so you'll have to come back.
Yeah. It has definitely been inspiring enough to come back. I will just encourage everyone to follow you, follow your work, and wish you all the best for the future.
It's been an absolute honor and privilege to be on your show. Yeah. And having had this special show where we're actually face to face rather than through a screen on the computer.
Yeah, has been really nice to see you again after seeing you in Amsterdam. I have the opportunity to visit you again. Definitely have to use the opportunity that the equipment is mobile and go on to the road.
Pick it up.
A bit more. And it has really, it's a blue sky and really beautiful. So I'm also looking forward to see a bit more of
Whitley
Bay here. Yeah.
Curry sauce with your chips.
That's the secret tip for the area. Okay, I have to try that. Thank you very much for your time, Ben.
No problem.